There was only white noise when you weren't here. Mostly lo-fi, but now it's clear. Oh, all that changed when.
Good evening and welcome to Italian Impact Weekly, coming to you live from Robert Morris University Studios. I'm your host, Steve Stefano Mancini.
And I'm Claudio Relsano. We appreciate all of you listening to us again this week.
We do, Claudio. And again, a big thank you to our listeners, our regular listeners. We also find out that we have listeners all over the world listening online, coming out to the website. Claudio, help me again. The website is?
www. Do we have to say www anymore?
I don't even know anymore.
I don't think so. But ItalianImpactWeekly.com. You can check out the show, check out our bios, leave comments on the email, questions@ItalianImpactWeekly.com. Everything's there.
Again, we're pushing you to our website because we want you. We're going to have a little bit of an announcement later.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the website. So we want to make sure that you know the website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. Go out there and you know, again, catch any of our older shows. We're going to have some new stuff out there. Again, we're not going to do a spoiler alert here, but we're going to have something new. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And as always, we want to thank our sponsors. Quick shout out, Nick and Amy, Pellucci Plumbing. Again, go out to the website to get their contact information. Thanks, Tom Deeks at Greater Pittsburgh Travel. And also, I want to thank the Calabria Club of Pittsburgh. Thank you again, Domenica and Salvatore. And Salvatore is Domenica's son. And he will be on the show in 2 weeks when we have I Ragazzi will be here. Your daughter.
My daughter, Ida, will be here again.
Another young lady who will remain nameless until the date. I'll be part of our suspenseful thing. And we're going to have Salvatore on the show. And then last but not least, we want to thank La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei, the only nonprofit here in Pittsburgh that is dedicated to teaching Italian and continuing to really push the culture. They are actually endorsed by the Italian consulate. So again, I encourage you to go out and check out La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei here in Pittsburgh. All right, Claudio, let's just jump right into our guest because I'm kind of excited about this one.
Okay. You know, I'm into people going after their goals and dreams. And this young man from Pittsburgh has a goal and dream to be in the music business, which he is in. But now he is in Nashville and very much looking forward to hearing his story. And that's AJ Rags. Angelo Raggianti, we got to mention that. But his stage name is AJ Rags. What's going on, AJ?
Hey, Claudio and Steve, thank you so much for having me today. I love the pronunciation of the Italian names you guys were just saying there. That's awesome.
That's right. That's why we call it Italian Impact Week.
This is why I only do it once a week. We spend a week working on the pronunciation so we don't screw it up whenever it's live.
That's right.
Yeah, man.
AJ, you know, I like to begin always at the beginning. And I mention my parents every single thing I do because if it wasn't for my parents, I would not be doing what I do today. There's an old Italian saying, if you ever see a turtle on top of a fence post, you know he didn't get there alone. So wherever it is I'm at in life, if it wasn't for my parents, I wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about your parents, and obviously we'll go into your goals and dreams, but and how you made that announcement to them.
Sure. Yeah, so first off, I wouldn't be on the show if it weren't for Claudio connecting to my dad. So there's that.
Oh, he's a good guy. I'll give you my opinion of him in a minute, but go on.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've never really kind of wanted to do anything else. I've always wanted to be a singer, I think, even though I might have not known what that was like when I was younger. But I owe most of that, being able to pursue that, to my parents, if not all of it. You know, my dad, when I was probably like 8 years old, I have memories of him playing, you know, all the Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin,
sure,
you know, all that kind of stuff in the car when we're driving places. And my mom bought me my first keyboard. I hadn't expressed at that young age, I'm sure, that I wanted a career in music, but I guess because I was singing so much and annoying the heck out of them all the time, they figured might as well get this thing going. So right. And you know, they have just been so supportive throughout my entire life of music and of what I wanted to do with music. And I went to an arts high school, and I have to tell you, I had many friends whose parents did not support them in their music. And it really can mess with hopes and dreams, and it really can essentially make them not happen because they either don't think they're good enough or they want to do something their parents want to support them with. So it's a blessing. I know many people who do not have the support of their parents. And so when, I don't know that there was a specific moment when I told my parents that I wanted to pursue music, just because from such a young age, I was always singing all the time, like nonstop. Recently, we were just watching some home videos back in Pittsburgh because I needed some for a music video I just recently put out. And I'm literally looking at these videos, and all I'm doing is singing. I'm like, how the heck did you guys not want to punch me in the face all the time? Because I just couldn't stop. So, but they got me voice lessons with a teacher from my church. His name is Will Smith, and he's not the Will Smith that everybody knows. He's white. But
and it doesn't hit anybody.
Slap people.
Right.
Right. Not that I know of, anyway. No, I'm sure he wouldn't. But it's another thing I should mention is teachers have been a big part of me wanting to pursue it, too. So he was a great first teacher to have. He taught me about how to have fun while I'm doing music. And that is something that if you can't have that, then you're obviously not going to want to pursue it as a career. So, but I think that's the biggest thing. My parents are my best friends, and they have been so supportive of me, even to this day. I think I call my dad and my mom every single day. Good. Pretty much, unless I'm too busy because I'm doing something with music. But even then, I'll text my dad at like 11 o'clock at night here, which is like midnight in Nashville. Mm-hmm. See if he's up. Midnight in Pittsburgh, excuse me. Yeah. But so, yeah, I'm very thankful and grateful for my parents.
AJ, were they musical themselves, or they just kind of believed in you? Was it more like, hey, our kid could have been shoveling ditches and we would have supported them, or were they, did they have a little musical tendency themselves?
Well, you know, so I always thought my dad had a great singing voice, and if he really wanted to do it, he could pursue it, but he's not interested in that. He just likes singing. You know, he used to rock the karaoke bars all over Pittsburgh. My mom, God bless her, she always jokes and says she has a voice that only God could love. I don't want to be harsh on her because I love my mom. She actually stays in tune pretty well, but both my parents say it skips a generation. So it actually goes back to both of my grandfathers. So my mom's dad and my dad's dad. My dad's dad was a great singer, and they both of them used to call me on the old speaker phones. And now I'm dating myself. Old speaker phones before cell phones, and sing like nursery rhymes to me. And that also helped, you know, foster a love of singing and music from a young age. But something that was really cool was my mom's dad, Pap, his name's Bill Bunura. He used to sing on the radio. And when he was like 11 years old, I think it was, they used to call him Little Frankie, like Frank Sinatra. And he played these tapes for me of these recordings of him on the radio. I kid you not, it sounded like a Justin Bieber concert, the way these girls were screaming for him. They used to chase him home after the concert. He had to run because he was afraid for his life.
Was that here in the States?
I'm not sure if that was in Pittsburgh. It was in the States. I'm not sure if that was in Pittsburgh or no, it had to be because that's where he grew up. So, but they were not immigrants, my grandparents, but I think their parents were, I believe.
Which is always Cloudy and I's next question. So where in Italy are they all from?
Okay, so to my knowledge, we're kind of a smattering of all over. So we're a little bit Toscano, a little bit from Calabria. We do have a little bit from Sicilia, but we don't always talk about that. I thought, you know what? I'm a server here in Nashville, and I said that to a table one time that was Italian, and they were all Sicilians. So that wasn't the greatest thing. But no, we're... Yes, Tuscany, Sicily, Calabria is the ones that I can most remember. But there's other places, too. It's kind of all over.
I talk about it all the time. I knew what I wanted to do August 19th, 1973. I came home, told my parents, and they were just always supportive every single day during the ups and downs. But I had some family members that were just flat out awful about it. Mm-hmm. And I use my worst enemy to be my best ally. They help motivate me. Now, well, you don't have to mention titles or names, obviously.
Sure.
But was there anyone in your life that said, you're not going to be a singer, you're not going to do anything? Did that ever happen? And if it did, how did you deal with it?
I don't think there was anyone, certainly not in my family, who said that I wasn't going to make it. There may have been people who were more critical of me than others. Certain people that I, no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't impress. And that's okay. That's actually a good lesson to learn. It's okay to not be able to impress everybody. But no, thankfully, there wasn't anyone who tried to like cut me down or anything like that. Sometimes some criticism, I guess I should say unwelcomed criticism. And now dealing with that, you know, a lot of the time I can be a very anxious person for no reason. Sometimes I am anxious going grocery shopping. You know? But
it's called passion.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. I like that. I'm going to use that now. But whenever I got that criticism that was like I said, unwelcomed criticism, it bothered me at first. But I think after talking it over with my folks, with my parents, and I learned that just take everything with a grain of salt and take the advice that you want and leave the advice that you don't, you know.
Well, you know, a couple of things, it hurt me tremendously because a few of these people I really cared for. But then after a while, like I said, sure. I used it to motivate me. And my parents used to fight for me constantly. And I remember it to this second. But there is a champion boxer who accomplished a lot. So a few years ago, and he retired years and years ago. But anyway, he had a family member say to him, "Do you feel like you've accomplished a lot?" And the guy said, "Yeah, I was a champion. I'm in the Hall of Fame, of course." "Well, do you think you accomplished something last year?" The guy goes, "Yeah, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Of course I'm accomplishing things." "Well, how about this week?" And he said, "What are you getting at?" The guy just did not want to give this fighter credit no matter what. And sometimes people, they are not happy with their lives. So they don't want you to be happy with your life. Even though they may be successful doing everything, they just do not want you to achieve things. But I'm glad that you said you really didn't have that. For me, like I said, I had it, a ton of it. Again, my parents were unbelievably supportive. But, you know, looking back on it, if I would have had nothing but support through, be it family members or even people that I worked for, I wrote a book, AJ. I wouldn't have, what am I going to do writing a book? Everybody was great with me. Everybody was supportive. Everybody loved me. See you later. No, I wouldn't have wrote a book. You know, Vinny Paz, the boxer, said, if I didn't get into a car accident, No movie. So sometimes you make lemonade out of lemons. But Steve?
AJ, again, for the folks that are listening, just tuned in, we were talking to AJ Rags, Angelo Raggianti. And Angelo, you went to CMU and you graduated with a BFA in vocal performance. I'm guessing that you were all in then.
What year did you graduate from CMU?
He's a kid. 2017.
2017.
I've been coaching there since 2005.
He was baseball. The guy singing in the showers.
Okay, that's him.
Now, but my point, though, is, you know, your question is, you were pretty much all in then. When you went to CMU, you were going, "I'm going vocal, and I'm both feet in the water." I remember we had an interview with Mario. Remember, he said there was no plan B.
No plan B.
So can I say the same thing to you? Did you have a plan B, or were you like, "Nope, I'm going in both feet, and that's it"?
You know, I never really did have a plan B because, like I mentioned, I never really had a desire to do anything else. I always kind of joke and said, if music didn't work out, maybe I could become a cook. Not that that's an easy profession. But,
depends you know, where you eat.
Yeah, that's true. It depends where you eat. That's funny. But no, I was all in. I love it so much, and it's the good Lord put passion in my heart for it, and if I was doing anything else, I know that I wouldn't be happy because this is just what my heart's set on. And I wanted to go and get a degree at CMU, which is primarily classical music, because I had only been trained in classical music and jazz music up to that point in my life. I wanted the right technique so that I could go and do a career in pop music, which is what I'm doing today. So yeah, CMU was great. I learned so much there, had some great teachers. Again, I owe a lot of everything that I do to awesome teachers, which they've really just changed my life. So,
and I did want
all in, man.
And I was going to pick on it because, like I said, I'm looking at your resume, for lack of a better term here, and you did a lot of opera. So when you were in CMU, where you were basically focusing on opera, but that wasn't the direction you were looking to take, though, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the degree at CMU, technically the degree is called Music Performance Voice, but it's easier to say vocal performance because it's just that's what makes sense, you know. But yeah, it was opera, and that was what the degree was in. But I did find time to do other things other than opera because even though I wanted to learn it, that's not where my heart is, you know. So I did like I was in the CMU Jazz Choir, Jive, it was called, with Betsy Lawrence as the conductor. I was a member of an all-male a cappella group called the CMU Originals, which was so much fun, and I learned a lot just from that experience. I also did things in Scotch and Soda Theater, which is a student-run theater troupe on campus, and that was a good time, too. So I was pretty busy when I was there.
You know, AJ, you've won some awards. Gene Kelly Award, Best Actor in 2013, 2013 National High School Music Theater Awards, several things. But talk about some of the adversities that you've had to overcome. Question number one. Question number two, when did you decide, hey, I'm going to go to Nashville? And how hard was that to go to Nashville?
Mm-hmm.
And why Nashville? Yeah, so three questions there.
Okay, yeah. So as far as adversities go, you know, I think the biggest adversity in recent memory that I've had to overcome is kind of myself. And let me explain what I mean by that. So I'm my worst critic. I feel like all artists or anybody who's creative in any perspective, or maybe not even just creators, maybe anybody, are most critical of themselves. And I've been told by mentors and teachers that I'm way harder on myself than anybody else would be on me. You know, so something I've realized, especially since after moving here, is that I also am struggling with anxiety. And it's sometimes it just pops up without warning. And it's just a feeling of worry that is hard to make go away. But, you know, thankful to God that he's been helping me get through that and learn how to deal with that on my own. It's a big struggle, because sometimes when that happens, it's just like a feeling of not wanting to do anything at all. And then I feel worse afterwards because I haven't done anything and now I'm not productive and there's a whole waste of day. And you know, you guys know, I'm sure time is money. You know, if you're wasting time, then there's money going out the door. So
sure. That's
probably my biggest struggle for sure. When I was a lot younger and I was in middle school, I was severely bullied. I shouldn't say severely. I wasn't like physically bullied or anything like that, but definitely verbally bullied from a young age, primarily because I was the only boy in the church choir, which nowadays I look back at that and think, I was the only boy in the church choir. I don't know why I was getting bullied. This was awesome. all these girls around me, you know. But because I was involved with music, or for whatever reason, I got bullied a lot by the guys in my class. And as we all got older, thankfully they matured, but that was really tough. It messed with my confidence a little bit when I was younger, I think.
Sure.
And thankfully, when I went to high school, I went to an arts high school, which essentially is like, kind of like college, not as rigorous, but I had majors, like I was a voice major in high school too. We had like academics in the morning and arts classes in the afternoons. So it was cool because there was a lot of people there who I could resonate with and who I could relate to in the arts aspect. There were no sports there, you know, and I wouldn't have minded trying to play sports. I played sports all through middle school, but it's probably for the best, because then I could focus on music more. And the funny thing is, said I was the only guy in the church choir, in the kids' church choir. When I got to Kappa, was the name of the school, I was the only guy in my voice major class. So it happened again. But that
some
was,
good things from
still
that.
Really, really cool. Oh, for sure.
And why Nashville?
Why Nashville? That's right. So back in, I think it's, I want to say it's a year after I graduated from college, so probably 2018. My dad, who you know, Claudio, he's what I like to call a stage dad, but he's a good stage dad. He's not like you have to do this right now, or you have to do this for my son right now, or anything like that. He's not like the stuff you see on TV. He just, you know, really supports me and cares about me. He had been following a lot of different Facebook groups for people that wanted to get into a pop music career. And one of his pages he was following, he met a lady on there whose daughter, her name is Riley Roth. She got this publishing deal, joint deal, as a publishing deal and a label deal with BMG Publishing Nashville and Busby's record label here in Nashville, who Busby unfortunately passed away recently, but his label was called Altadena. And her mom had posted about this online. Her mom's name is Gretchen Ross. And my dad just reached out to her and said, how did you do that? Like, how did you get this to happen? How did you guys do that? And she connected me to my mentor here in Nashville. Her name is Charisse Voltore, and she's the president of Global Songwriters Connection. And I guess I should say, as soon as that happened, I think I was destined to move to Nashville, because I've learned so much from this woman and her company and all the mentors she has in her company. So, yeah, that was in 2018. And then I think I made my first trip down to Nashville that summer. Our family went on like a vacation there. At this point, I wasn't deciding I would want to move there. But then I kept doing online sessions with my mentor, and she would connect me to, like, you know, co-writers, people I could write songs with mm-hmm. here in town, and actually people who come into town from all over the country. And so there was a big network I was building here before I even moved here, actually, all through my mentor, Cherie. And then eventually I got on a bigger mentorship program with her, and she started connecting me to music publishers for meetings and pro writers. Now, pro writer is somebody who's either signed to a publishing deal or somebody who has like a great track record of like hit songs and things like that. So I could like build up my skills, and essentially, I guess you could say it's sort of like a crash college course in songwriting and performing, entertaining and mm-hmm. such. So, yeah, and after I did that, like I said, I had a decent network here. I would start making more frequent trips to Nashville with family and on my own. And every time I would have to go back to Pittsburgh, it would be harder and harder to leave.
Wow.
Like,
okay, good.
I just felt like the Lord was calling me to move here, and it felt like home. Now, Pittsburgh will always be home, but this feels like another home, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So that's why I made the move to Nashville, and very grateful to a friend, co-writer, and mentor of mine, Carrie Cunningham, who her and her husband, Tim, have let me rent out a room in their house down here, and I wouldn't be able to be here now if it weren't for them. So, yeah, it's just it was meant to be. Felt like it.
Very good, very good. Now, when you said about being tough on yourself and anxiety, mm-hmm. I think that we all do that. We all feel that you know, we can do better, and somebody may say, "Oh, you're doing a great job." I think I can do better. But when you said that, it reminded me of a story in 1984, me and three friends, mm-hmm. we were staying overnight at a friend's house. We're going to go golfing the next day. So three of my friends said, let's go to the Strip District, which obviously you know what the Strip District is. And there was some clubs there and stuff like that. And I said, nah, I'm not going to go. And I didn't go. I stayed in this house by myself in the dark pretty much, because I was worried about my future. Am I going to do something in professional baseball? Because there's no – when you're going into the entertainment business, as you are and as I did – there's no set pattern. It isn't, and this is no knock towards anybody and what they do. You do well in school, you go to college, do well in school, you apply for a job, and you get it. Not that it's that simple, but there is a game plan, a path. With what you did mm-hmm. and what you're doing and what I did and still doing, there was no path. So I remember that night in particular. I was just there by myself, and my one friend, Dave Nitschai, he said, no, Claude, don't worry. You'll be all right. You'll make it, this and that. I said, I don't know, Dave. Things aren't going too great right now. And then thank God things went the way they did. But I know exactly. I don't think they called it anxiety back then. They didn't call it. I don't know what the hell they called it. But, yeah, so I know exactly, you know, where you're coming from. But it's something that you have to fight through. And Clint Hurdle, the former Pirates manager who's now a front office with the Colorado Rockies, he said something that I think about almost every day. He said, feelings aren't facts. Sometimes we think things that just because we think them doesn't mean that, you know, that's the way it is. But Steve?
No, you stole my question.
Oh, okay.
No, I wanted to pick up on the anxiety piece.
And you're going
to
tell me that you were in a house by yourself with Dave Nitschai in 1984.
Wait a minute. That was you? I thought that was me. No, I did want to pick up on two things you said. You did talk about anxiety because a lot of people struggle with that. And Claudia, you made a good point just now. A lot of people, they didn't call it back then. It was like this, oh, just toughen up, just suck it up. And now people are starting to realize, mm-hmm. like, there's actual, you know, physical you know, ramifications if you don't properly deal with anxiety. Like, it does affect your health. But you said you had, do you actually have, I mean, you don't mind me asking, I mean, you can tell me, we can always, you know, you can answer in a different way, but I mean, do you still suffer like that kind of anxiety that is it like just the nerves or just, is it more like a common, like, I'm just got little butterflies in the stomach?
Yeah. So, I do still suffer from it and I'm learning how to deal with it. I think everybody probably deals with it in a different way, but for me, I've always been, you know, Italian, raised Catholic. I'm still trying to be as good of a Catholic as I can, although I think I fail a lot. But that has diving into prayer a lot more has helped me so much. There's a certain prayer that I pray with my dad, actually, called the Surrender Novena. And it's just about surrendering all of your worries over to God, essentially. And I kid you not, it's kind of changed the way I think about anxiety now. So it's I'm not claiming it as my anxiety because I don't want to call it mine. I don't own it. You know, it's just something that happens to me and a lot of other people. And sometimes it'll come, like I said, if I'm at the grocery store, sometimes it'll come if I have a particularly, not necessarily stressful, but like a lot of work to do. For example, this past weekend, I was very grateful to be a part of a songwriting retreat. But there's just a lot of work that comes with that and it's easy to get overwhelmed, you know? So the prayer has helped with that a lot. Another thing that's helped me with it is physical exercise. Like going to the gym, I got a gym membership again. And speaking of which, I need to go to the gym today. you know, going for a walk just to clear the air, that kind of stuff. Oddly enough, I also enjoy baking. I know that's not a very manly thing to say, but
good. That's good.
Yeah, that's the truth. So that doing things like that and trying to schedule time for myself, I think, which is something I don't do. Like, and what I mean by that is like just time to chill or go out, hang with my friends or do things like that.
Recharging your batteries.
That helps a lot. Exactly. And I've learned from other people who struggle with similar things that doing that, like having scheduled time to recharge your batteries, helps tremendously. And it does.
Interesting, by the way, what you're doing to address your anxiety, because, you know, I actually do get that once in a while. Those I don't want to call them panic attacks, but those like anxiety attacks. And ironically enough, what I find is I'm so busy. It's when I'm not busy
that
it hits
me,
right? And then all of a sudden you're like, what the heck is happening? You know, and then you're like, then you're really on, like, good Lord, save me, you know. But I want to, because I want to touch on the faith, because I'm like you. I'm a very practicing, active Catholic, you know. And you know, everything you said, ironically enough, it's very interesting to me because I'm on a very similar path as far as, you know, how you're dealing with these things, trying to be active about it. You know, obviously trying to incorporate my faith into that. But I am curious, how does that, incorporating your faith is, you know, how does that tie into your music? I mean, I'm not saying you're a Christian writer, but are these things that tie into your everyday, you know, of living, which then of course spills into your music, or do you keep them separated? I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, I would say it definitely spills over into everyday living because for me, if you're not living your faith everywhere, then you're not really living it. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So, there's a lot of things that a lot of people write songs about that I, by the grace of God, I mean, I could fall at any time, but I won't write songs about. And I'm not writing Christian music. It's all pop music. It's secular. And that's not to say I won't do a Christian album in the future. But, you know, it's, I'm not going to write you know, there's an interesting story. So a quick little side story that kind of ties into this. One of my biggest influences is Ed Sheeran.
Sure.
And I love his music, and I'm hoping to see him here at the end of July. But there's a story he told in an interview one time where he was in New York, and he was in a cab with a cab driver going I forget where he was going, but going somewhere. And the cab driver had told him that he won't let his son listen to Ed's music because of all the cuss words in it. And so Ed went and took all of his songs on the album and took all the cuss words out of them and then put them back out. So if it's not just cuss words, I mean, there's other thematic things in songs. if you're putting that kind of stuff into your music, I mean, some people do it, and sometimes they feel like there's no other way you can say that, but you're always going to limit yourself to a certain extent. You know, there's going to be some people who will never listen to certain songs with certain things in them, and I don't want to do that. I'm not at a level where I can afford to limit myself.
You can't pick and choose your audience at this point. No, but you know what?
Exactly.
But you are 100% right. Look, it's like you're either both feet in, you believe, in which case it impacts everything you do, which means you're going to make a conscious effort to not do certain things. But that doesn't mean you have to run out there and say, like, I'm going to be Mercy Me or one of the other, you know, more larger Christian groups are out there. It's like, hey, I can still write good secular music and not talk about, you know, it doesn't have to be too live crew. You know, it can be good secular music, but not necessarily be Christian music. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, the world probably needs a little more of that, to be honest with you.
We are going to take a quick break. And while we do, we're going to be listening to AJ's, a little snippet of some AJ's music, which is good. But don't forget to go to our website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com, to hear archive shows with Vince Ferragamo, Mario Andretti, the guy from Mancini's, Nick Mancini Hartner, I believe, is his name. Yeah, good guy. Really good guy. So we have a lot of great guests. Also, you could listen to my show, The Claudio Relsana Show, on claudiorelsana.com. Listen to great guests there again. Mario Andretti, Vince Ferragamo, Dick Vermeil, Rocky Blyer, Ken Griffey Sr., Jerry Cooney. My book, you can get that on my website and at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble and Robinson Township. And that's Lead from the Heart Up, Not the Neck Up, How to Create a Positive Winning Culture in the Field and in the Office. And back to our show here at Italian Impact Weekly. And we do have an announcement coming up about that. But some guests that are coming up next week. One of boxing's top promoters, Joe DiGuardia of Star Boxing, is a great guy and can't wait to talk to him. Jerry Cooney, former boxing champion, icon. Donnie Lalonde, former light heavyweight champ of the world. We're trying to get Dick Vermeil and Vince Papale, the subject of the movie Invincible, former Philadelphia Eagle. Vince will be on. So we have a lot of great guests. And again, can't wait to talk a little bit about our new announcement here before we end our show here. Steve?
Now, again, we want to thank our sponsors, Pellucci Plumbing. Thanks, Nick and Amy. Thank Greater Pittsburgh Travel, Tom Deeks. Thank you again for your support. The Calabria Club of Pittsburgh, Domenica and the folks, again, thank you very much. And last, certainly not least, La Scuola d'Italia, Galileo Galilei. Again, Angela and all the folks there, we appreciate your support. Again, La Scuola is the only nonprofit school here in Pittsburgh, and it is endorsed by the Italian consulate.
Every time I turn on my TV, losing my faith in humanity. It's full of angry bad news faces, but there's a new story breaking. Don't even have to leave my neighbor.
Okay, we're back with AJ Rags. And AJ, you know, we weren't sure where this interview was going to go, but you're going exactly in the lane that I wanted it to go, and that is going after your goals and dreams. And we appreciate your honesty with some of the things you're going through. And you know what? If you say you're struggling with anxiety, I wouldn't say you're struggling with it. I think you're dealing with it quite well, better than quite well. And you're using it to, as I said earlier, your worst enemy can be your best ally. It's motivating you. And I think that's what's going to take you to where you want to go. And, you know, like I said, with me, yeah, I was coaching and I won a few championships, so on and so forth, but that wasn't the goal and dream. And my mom passed and all kind of stuff. But it when I was, 2001, how old was I? 37 years old is when things... when I got my first pro job. You know, my dad used to say, I'd say I got 137 rejection letters, my dad would say, that's okay, keep at it, keep at it, keep at it. And I kept at it. I wanted to quit sometime, sure, but I didn't, which that story will be another show. But was there ever a time that you wanted to quit, and what made you not quit?
Good question. the thought of quitting music crosses my mind maybe once or twice. No, I shouldn't say it like that. It crosses my mind maybe every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is not because I don't love it. I love it so much. And I know that if I did end up quitting, I would just be so sad, and I wouldn't be happy, like I mentioned earlier. But, it does cross my mind only because it's hard. It's difficult. It's a lot of hard work. And... it's just the negative thoughts enter in that say, you know, do you really have time for this? Do you really want to do this? Mm-hmm. And I just have to remind myself, and God reminds me that, yes, I do want to do this, because, like I said, if I'm not doing it, I won't be happy. So it's really the only thing I've ever wanted to do, and I'm super grateful that I get to do it. Another thing I should mention that my mentor tells me all the time, and tells all of her mentees, I guess you would call them, you know, don't wait for permission for somebody to tell you you can live your dream. Mm-hmm. You're living your dream right now, you know?
Right.
So, and I am. I never in a million years, like 5-6 years ago, never would have thought I would be living in Nashville and writing with signed writers who've had number one hits with, like, chart-topping artists. And never would have thought I would have gotten there. This is, like, if five, six years ago me would see this, I would be so ecstatic. So I just constantly try to remind myself that it's such a blessing to be where I am right now, and the timing will happen when it's meant to. And that's probably how I would deal with that. But yes, I have thought of quitting many times.
Sure.
You know what though, AJ, that's an excellent point, because you know what? We can all define success in different ways. And it's not about having $100 million in the bank. You kind of just nailed it. Whether you know it or not, you are living your dream. You are in Nashville, writing songs, recording music, playing in front of audiences. Maybe it's not 30,000, 60,000, but you might get there. Maybe you don't get there. But you're doing something that I think a lot of people probably don't have the courage to do. Because there's probably a lot of people that say, I want to be a singer. I want to be an athlete. I want to be this. I want to be that. But they go, but I'll never make it. I'll never make it. I can't do that. Or I'm going to take the safe way. Well, that's nice, but I'm going to hold off on that. And they pass on their dreams, and they never even know if they can make it. But again, what does making it mean? So I'm going to ask you the question. You know, I'm looking at your bio. You've had over 57,000 views on your YouTube channel. That's not a trivial amount. We don't quite get that every week on our ItalianImpactWeekly.com website. And maybe one day we'll get there. Maybe one day we'll never get there. But you've got 57,000 views. So let me ask you, what in your mind is what are you thinking is when you'll finally say, well, I finally made it? What is your definition of success in that regard?
Good question. You know, if I'm being 100% honest, I don't think I'll ever reach that point, but I'll explain why. But my big dream, my big goal that I know that I will feel that more secure than I am now is to sell out Madison Square Garden someday. Wow. And to have the people in Madison Square Garden like singing my song lyrics back to me. That's the main dream. Now, the reason I say I don't know if I'll ever reach the point of like I have made it, I don't think that ever goes away of like wanting more, at least not in this life. There have been stories I've heard from pro writers who have worked with like pretty famous people. And I'm not saying that to brag or anything. I'm just saying to prove this point. They've been in sessions with them and they're like recording songs and they're like, oh, that was awful. Oh, I stink. Oh, this is so bad. And they're like selling out stadiums. So that, I don't think that ever goes away. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this story, but Michael Jackson, when he debuted the moonwalk for the first time on the Motown 25th anniversary, was crazy. You've probably seen that video.
Yes,
crazy. Yeah. Everybody went insane. But apparently he walked off stage after doing that and cried because he thought it was so bad. So, like, if Michael Jackson could do that, I don't think that feeling's ever going to go away. Maybe that's a good thing, because maybe it'll always create a hunger to, like, you know, keep staying inspired and working hard for it.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Just don't, I would just say that we don't ever want to set impossible, unattainable goals where we know we can never reach it. But I do like the idea.
Right.
We should always challenge ourselves and say, look, I can do that a little better. And there's nothing wrong with
right.
it. To your point, you can always do something a little better. I'm sure you can write a great song and go, you know, in hindsight, maybe I should have did this. That's okay. The next song, you apply that to it. I'm kind of a fun question for you. You've been living in Nashville for a little while. Who are some of the famous celebrities you've met?
While I've lived here, I don't know that I've trying to remember if anybody while I've lived here, but before I moved, crazy kind of story. So my mom and I were on a trip here for a similar writer's retreat, like what I did this weekend. And we went to my favorite place to listen to music in town, which is called The Listening Room. And essentially you'll go there, long story short, they'll have four songwriters, performers on stage, and they're each singing songs that they wrote. But a lot of the time when you go there, it'll be like, oh, this next song was recorded by Carrie Underwood, or this next song was cut by Luke Bryan. And so these are the people that write like the songs you hear on the radio a lot of the time. So we went there one night, and I had no idea she was going to be there. But my probably my biggest inspiration and biggest crush of all time was there. Tori Kelly was in the house, and I, like I said, had no idea she was going to be there, and I was wearing her hoodie. I had her merch on me. And so my mom and I are sitting there watching the stage. This beautiful girl with her signature curly blonde curls walks past our table in a hot pink suit, and my mom just looks at me and says, "Was that?" And I was like, "Uh-huh." And I started like freaking out a little bit on the inside. But what had happened was she was there because one of the writers on stage, she was writing her next album with, and he invited her to come and sing a song, and it was just crazy. So I was wearing her hoodie. I got to take a picture with her. That was so awesome. But that kind of stuff happens all the time in Nashville. I mean, everybody lives here. There's I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of musicians especially live in this town, and you could run into Garth Brooks at Kroger, you know. It's just the way that it is. It's pretty cool.
How about Lori Morgan? Did you ever see her?
Lori Morgan, I have not.
Okay.
I have not run into
Lori
Morgan. It's all
right. I said hello if you do. Okay. You know what? We're going to let you go, but we really appreciate you being on. But I'm going to finish with this. Your dad is about as good of a man as you can get. He's very proud of you, but he's just a good guy. And so you're lucky to have him. And I know what a good dad is because I had one for sure. And lastly, you know, we certainly wish you all the best with everything. And I know that you're going to get what you want. And you just have to keep chipping away, keep biting the eating the elephant one bite at a time, keep doing little accomplishments until they build up. And you're going to deal with rejection and failure. But you know what? You dust yourself off and you keep going. Like I said, it took me a long time. And I still, you know, people say, oh, you've done X, Y, and Z. I still feel I can do more. Dan Marino says you can do more. You can always do more. So I always feel I can do more. But I know you're definitely going in the right direction. I give you credit for doing what you've done already. And trust me, you're nowhere near where you're going to be. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Claudio. I appreciate that. And it's been such a pleasure talking to you guys today. Hope to talk again soon.
Yep, and we will. And Steve, any?
No, thanks, Age. Again, I always have this ask. Once you do make it famous, I will take two tickets front row.
Oh, wait a minute. How can people listen to music, a website, all that stuff?
Oh, sure, yeah. So you can find me on all social medias, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all over. AJ Rags, that's AJRAGGS, two Gs, on all of those. And I also have a website. It's www.ajragsmusic.com, where you can find out about booking me for a show or if I have any live performances coming up and such.
Awesome. And AJ, I'll throw that up on our website too. So folks, if you didn't catch all that, don't worry. You go out to ItalianImpactWeekly.com and I'll put the information out there on the website. So he's got a good, bright future.
He's putting himself in right position
exactly.
To get to where he wants to go.
Now, our special announcement, and this is a biggie. So we absolutely enjoy doing ItalianImpactWeekly.com, and we're going to continue to do ItalianImpactWeekly.com for the foreseeable future. But one of the things that Claudio and I kind of specialize in is, you know, we have a lot of business and life experience, and everybody does. But I think, you know, we just feel that we've got something a little more unique and special. One, I think, you know, people have told me this, I don't know if they've told you this, but, you know, we've got a lot of chemistry between us. We kind of bounce off each other. And then, you know, getting to know Claudio over the last year, he's got a lot of great stories. And let me tell you something, this guy's going to write the cliche, you know, encyclopedia. It's coming out of Claudio at some point. But so we're going to have a new show. And that new show is going to be called Business and Life with Claudio and Steve. And Claudio, come on, we can talk about the show a little bit. What are we thinking?
You know, originally we wanted to, it's very important for us to have impact on people. And because so many people, as you will hear in our next show, we're still going to be doing Italian Impact Weekly. We'll talk about that in a second. But this show, Business and Life, so many people have had impact in my life, and so many experiences have had impact. So we want to share our stories and just some of the topics. And I was writing some of these down now. Now, when Steve and I first connected about doing a show, what, in February, if I'm not mistaken,
last year, right?
I sent him a list of topics, and some of them were dealing with rejection, funnels of income, pivoting to a new career, mentors, dealing with failure, dealing with loss. But just here, I just told Steve a couple seconds ago, putting yourself in the right position to succeed, having goals and dreams, you know, things like that that we have dealt with, overcoming things that we've dealt with. And so have you. But we just like to share how we've done it and how we got from point A to point B and how to assist, hopefully assist and help you. Maybe we'll say something that'll motivate you or get you off the ground or put a smile on your face or give you a little confidence. It's very important to me, and I know it's important to Steve as well. We're not just here to joke around, clown around, or say something stupid, or we cleaned the garage out or any of that stupid stuff. We're here to actually really help you. And, you know, Steve, and a lot of people say, with my cliches, my parents, if I dropped a pencil, there was a saying behind it. But a lot of people that I've studied, and number one with my parents, number one, my parents, but so many people that you're going to hear me talk about, whether you like them or not, they are, I do, and I know some of them, but we mentioned Ferragamo and Andretti and Alex Rodriguez, Magic Johnson, Greg Norman, George Foreman, Fran Tarkenton, people that I study every single day. Donnie Lalonde, Jerry Cooney is going to be on, or Papali, those guys are going to be on our show. But it's just very important to me that we share. We're going to open up our life and tell you how we got from point A to point B, some of the good, bad, and the ugly mistakes that we've made, good things we've done, you know, stupid things perhaps that you can learn from. And I'm really, really excited about it and passionate about it. And we're passionate about this, but I guarantee you our cadence is going to be a little higher. Right. Our passion is going to be higher. And we're not going to need notes. I'm going to tell Steve, today is dealing with rejection. Steve, bang, is going to do
something. Steve knows all about rejection.
As we all do. As we all do.
No, you know, I tell you what, it's funny though, because I feel like I'm in the opposite boat of you. Because I went off to the Navy when I was 17, right after I turned 18 years old. I was on my own. Basically, just whatever I did in life, I did it on my own. I went to school at night, you know, got married young, had kids young, and everything was just a grind. I try and teach my kids, you know, that there's simpler ways, but I had to learn it the hard way. And, you know, you and I had this conversation. We talked about these people that have these self-help programs and all these, you know, come to my seminar for 2 days, you know, spend $20,000, and I'm going to tell you the secret to success. And you know what I'd love to do? I would love to go interview the people that spend all that money in those seminars and say, how many of you are now successful because of that seminar? And I'll bet you that number is pretty darn low. Yeah. It's a great story. And a lot of times you might get somebody that had that one thing. Oh, they struggled really hard. They made the team and then they were a success and they retired. I'm not saying that's trivial. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people, there's a lot of athletes that do that. And I'm not poo-pooing that. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's almost the anomaly.
Right.
Because life to me is more of a grind.
Sure.
It's more of slow successes, you know, slow climbs that get you to the top.
And drops.
Right. And then eventually you get to the top of it. That's why I asked AJ. I said, you know, what is your definition of success? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need $20 million in the bank to be successful.
Well, I do, but anyway.
Well, I would like it. Who doesn't want the money? But the truth is, again, my cliche, you can't take it with you. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth in that. So what is success in life? What is it? And I think everybody needs to ask them this question. Is when you're, you know, God willing, when you're in your 90s and you're laying in your bed and you're dying and you look back at your life and you say, I'm happy. What is it that would have made you happy? Because a lot of people say, well, I should have worked less. You know what? I don't mind work.
Nope.
So to sit there and say, well, I'll regret working a lot and having, you know, I have multiple jobs. Oh, I'll regret that. Like, actually, I won't. Because that enabled me to do things. Well, it made you, you know, you're stressed out all the time. Yeah. But what's the alternative? Doing nothing?
Right.
I see a lot of people that do nothing. And you know what?
They're great at it.
Yeah, exactly. But people say, oh, if I retired, I would do nothing. It's like, and then you're laying in your bed. You know what you're going to think? I wasted my life. I didn't do anything. So it's like, what is your success rate in your life? And again, this is the things that we're going to talk about, because I don't think it's a answer. I think it's going to be little nuggets that are going to feed you, these little crumbs these little pieces of food that are going to feed you as you go through your daily life. Because I'm not saying that those self-help seminars and books can't help you. I've read a few of them. There are some good ones out there.
But to your point, though, let me say this, and we're not being hypocritical. Right. To your point, a lot of
we'll be offering a self-help seminar next.
We're building to that. But I'm good with those. Okay. But as Fran Tarkin says, I'm going to quote a lot of these guys. He says a lot of these people with these biz ops or leadership seminars. Okay, who did you lead?
Right.
Well, the guys who work for me. Yeah, I get it. We actually, as he says, Fran Tarkin, we have
difference.
Our hands in the soil. Right. We've actually been to Rome, so we can say, and a story that you'll hear me say numerous times, I am going to repeat myself like a song, and what do they call that, the chorus. There was one time my dad was, and this is included in my book, which you can get on my website, but this lady was telling my dad, this lady and my dad were talking about the steel mills and why they shut down. And she said, and she was a professional student, very nice lady, but she was a professional student. She said, well, they closed down because of this, Olindo. And my dad said, no, Mrs. Smith, they closed because of this. She said, no, they closed because of A, B, and C. And my dad said, no, they closed because of 1, 2, and 3. And I'll never forget, I can tell you where this was and her tone of voice. She said, Olindo, I studied it. My dad said, Mrs. Smith, I lived it. Right? So the things that we're going to talk about, we lived.
That's right. And that's my point. That's the difference, because there's too many people out there that want to offer you advice. But to your point, they never got their hands dirty. Look, I teach part-time in university. And I've said this. I said this to my students. I'll say it. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm not ashamed to say this. Universities and academics and people that do this professional learning stuff, that's fine to get you a baseline of knowledge. But I don't think you can be an expert in anything unless you do it.
Yeah.
And so unless you are out there living life, grinding away, you can't give me life at lessons. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but my nephew gave me a great quote. He said, I won't take advice from someone who's not in a place I don't want to be. And I thought, damn, that has the last few weeks, that has stuck with me. And I think that's the one thing we're going to do different, is we'll meet with you, we'll talk with you, but we're going to tell you, in the real world, this is how it works. And I go back in time. I remember the 80s movie with Rodney Dangerfield when he goes back to school. It's the same principle. Remember, he's sitting in the business class and the professor's up there telling him, oh, you've got to have this one. I was like, no. You got to pay the union boss. Yeah. You know, you got to bribe your local.
He was a zillionaire, I believe,
right.
In the movie.
Right. Yeah. That's the whole point, though, is if you want to be successful, it's not about people that necessarily have $20 million in their bank, because they might have won the lotto. Is that a successful person? Are they going to have $20 million in their bank in 5 years? Now, you've talked, and you've known a lot of athletes that have made $100 million. Well, now they got $10 million. Well, the guy's got $10 million in his bank. Yeah, but he lost 90 because he was dumb.
Right.
So is that really a person you want to take advice from?
Right.
So you go, where were they and where are they? And then I think that is success to me, not somebody that's got $20 million made, because they might have had $200 million and they're bad investment decisions and they've lost it all. So,
and some of the guests we've had with Mario Andretti, did we ask him about the Indy 500? No. We talked about business. Vince Ferragamo, did we bring up – I don't believe we brought up the 79 Super Bowl against the Steelers. We may have touched 2 seconds on it, but it was business and life and some of the things they've had to deal with or what have you. And the guests that we've had, Jerry Cooney, I guarantee you, he'll threaten me at the beginning of the show, as he always does. But after that, all we have to say, Jerry, what's going on? He will run with it, and he will tell you. He's very open about the struggles he's had in life and the ups and downs and how he's doing well now. He doesn't have to do anything if he doesn't want to. And so hopefully some of the things that we talk about on this show will stick with you, because we really, really – and I'll say this. Sometimes I'll go for a walk or whatever the case is. I watch and listen to a lot of podcasts. And our boxing show, which I forgot to mention, The Boxing Authorities, is without question the best boxing show out there by far. This show that we're going to be doing, Steve and I, it's going to be a great show. I tell you why. I do listen to some shows on business or whatever, and they try to get real slick with their verbiage, charcoal steps and black couch meetings. We ain't doing that. That's not who we are. We're going to give it to you straight. Or people who have not really accomplished much, or they haven't been in the leadership role, or they really haven't had to deal with failure. We will give you exact stories, and I'll get very personal. I might not mention names or titles, but I'll be exact with you and share stories with you because we we really want to help you. We really want to tell our stories and really, again, have impact on you.
I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
But again, final thought, and then we're going to close out. But, mm-hmm. you know, we sell this notion that success is sitting on a beach with $20 million in your bank. And you said it, that a lot of these guys that are successful, they don't have to do anything, but they just enjoy. They find their passion, and they go both feet, and it just happens to make them money.
I have to say, one time this one guy asked me, what do you do for fun? And I said, well, I love spending time with my family. I love to read, love to golf, but I love to chase a buck as long as I catch it once in a while. You know, I enjoy the chase, and I think it's good that you do. But my mom used to say about the people who didn't do anything, they're a piece of meat with eyes. You know, no. I ain't doing that. Mario Andretti said, I'm going to keep at it until what? They put me in a box.
That's it.
You know, and he's accomplished quite a bit. Again, Greg Norman, you're going to hear these stories over and over again, like a chorus. Greg Norman, who has 400 million plus, he's done everything possible. He said, I still only think I've done 25-30% of what I'm capable of doing. So we're going to, but that's the lane we're going to go into soon.
Yep, Steve, we're going to announce that after Steve gets back from vacation. We're going to start recording.
Is that what you want to do? Okay.
Well,
that's fine with me. Whatever you want to do, just keep listening.
Yeah, that's right. Just keep tuning in. We're going to keep you updates.
Right.
That show's probably going to kick off sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think you can tell our passion for it.
Exactly right. This is where the heart. But again, for the folks that are enjoying Italian Impact Weekly, we're not going away. May not be Italian Weekly, but it's going to be an Italian.
Right, we're going to have to change.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. We got some work to do.
So we got more news coming for you. So again, appreciate it. Again, we'll hope you tune in again next week. Got a really good guest coming on. And if you can't listen in the local, Joe DeGuard, if you can't listen local, you can always listen online at khbradio.com. And if you can't catch us live, always come on, check out the website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. And as always, please feel free to email us at questions@ItalianImpactWeekly.com. We do appreciate your emails, so keep them coming at questions@ItalianImpactWeekly.com.
Thank you, Joe Hale, our wonderful producer. And as always, thank you, Linda and Ida, who will be a guest soon, and my mom and dad, Olindo and Ida.